From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. When you think of Asian American women, who comes to mind? Maybe Illinois U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth, born in Thailand, or civil rights activist Evelyn Yoshimura? How about Chien Shung Wu, the Chinese American physicist who was part of the Manhattan Project? Or maybe no one comes to mind. That is a problem many Asian American women have shared in the wake of rising anti-Asian violence in America and the tragic murder of workers and a patron at three Atlanta-area spas on March 16th. Today, we're exploring the stereotypes, sexism, and racism that affect Asian women. We're joined by Dr. Teresa Mock, a licensed clinical psychologist in Urbana. Hello, Dr. Mock. Thank you for being here today. And we are also joined by Grace Chan McKibben, Executive Director of the Coalition for a Better Chinese American Community in Chicago. Grace, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, we want to invite you to join our conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. Maybe you or someone you know has been affected by attacks on Asian Americans, Asian American women in particular, or maybe you're concerned about it. The phone number again is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can always tweet us at 21st Show. Before we begin, we also want to acknowledge the names of last week's shooting victims, most of whom, as I said, were Asian women. Daoyo Fung, age 44, was an employee at Young's Asian Massage. Hyun Chung Grant, 51, was a school teacher in South Korea before immigrating to the U.S. Xiaojie Tan owned two businesses and was killed one day before her 50th birthday. Yong Ae-soo, age 63, was a licensed massage therapist. She'd recently rejoined one of the spas after being laid off during the pandemic. Soon-Jia Kim, age 69, was a mother of two and grandmother of three. She immigrated to the U.S. from Seoul in order to give her family a better life. Soon-Chung Park, 74, moved to Atlanta from New York City and prepared meals for the workers. Also killed were Paul Andre Michaels, age 54, an Army veteran and business owner. He'd been doing work as a handyman at one of the spas. And finally, Delana Ashley Yon, a 33-year-old mother of two, married less than a year, was visiting the spa on a date with her husband, who survived. Dr. Teresa Mock, I want to begin with you. You're a licensed psychologist in Urbana. Can you take us back to when you first heard about this attack? What went through your mind?
Absolutely. And again, I want to thank you for having us to talk about such an important issue. It was heartbreaking, I think, but not surprising, sadly. I think that oftentimes we are not used to hearing about things like this in mainstream media. And yet Asian American women in particular are often subjected to the dualities of sexism and racism. But like what we saw with some of the initial reports was a lot of focus on humanizing the murderer and not so much on the victims. So it was horrifying, but not surprising.
Well, about that, within hours of the attack, there was a white man from Georgia, age 21, named Robert Long. He was arrested. He faces charges of murder and assault. Law enforcement says he confessed to the shootings. He says he was not motivated by racial animus. But Grace Chan McKibben is a person who works closely with the Chinese American community in Illinois. How do you respond to that? Or how does the Asian American community respond to that?
I think even that statement alone is racialized and sexualized, because the gunman, perpetrator did say that he was motivated by a desire to get rid of his own sexual addiction objects, and it objectifies Asian American women as sexual objects. And even in that comment alone, for our community, the Chinese American community, specifically the community that lives in Chinatown, it is it triggers all these images of misogyny and sexism and racism. I, just like Teresa was saying, that I really wanted to uplift those women that have been business owners or have been working hard to provide their own for their own families. So shortly after the murder when WGN News wanted to have a report, wanted to interview me and residents in Chinatown on Wednesday night. I wanted to make sure that a Chinese woman, that a Chinese American woman that I know who owns a massage spa was able to speak on air. She spoke without video, and I was able to translate what she said from Mandarin. And even though the reporter only took one sentence from her, it was still important to have her voice heard to make people understand that the victims are real people that could be somebody's aunt, somebody's mother, somebody's sister.
And of course, the attacks, and as I mentioned earlier, the attacks in Atlanta come as part of a broader terrible trend. The organization Stop AAPI Hate, that's Asian American and Pacific Islander, they say they've tracked nearly 4,000 hate incidents against Asian American people between March of last year and this February. And we know women of Asian descent are 2.5 times more likely to face violence than men. Dr. Mock, have you seen an increase in Asian American clients in your practice worried about this? What are they worried about?
Yes, I have. And actually, I found ever since the previous president took office, I've had clients coming in very specifically referencing some of his rhetoric and the way he would refer to people of color, of women, and that they were specifically seeking therapy because it was causing them so much pain and anxiety. And I've never had that before in all my years of practice where somebody so directly referenced politics and the climate of the country is why they were coming in for services. So I think that there's been this kind of fear when there was talk with the coronavirus and everything happening and the way that language like the China virus, Kung Flu, was used and people really minimized it. And that was often people outside of the Asian American community. Many Asian Americans were very concerned that language like that leads to further dehumanization. And the fear was that something would happen. And we've seen these kinds of attacks happening to Asian Americans across the country.
And let me ask about that. Grace Chan McKibben, you work on civic engagement and reaching out to people in Chinatown, in Chicago. And as far as I understand, there have not been deadly attacks here, like we've seen on the East Coast and the West Coast. You did recently conduct a survey on the social media platform WeChat. Can you first talk about why you chose to go with WeChat for the survey and then what you learned from it?
So the Midwest Asian Health Association, which is one of the coalition partners, and CBCAC, my coalition, worked together on this WeChat survey, and we just started it this week. And in 2 days, we've received 101 responses. And that is important because the national website that you had cited, the Stop Anti-Asian Hate, recorded only 92 incidents out of the 3,800 that they've received nationwide. Only 92 were in Illinois. So it is true that anecdotally, from talking to other organization leaders, that we have not heard about the number or the level of violence of incidents here in Illinois or in Chicago. But we also believe that some of the more minor incidents, like slights or people staring at them or people yelling at them on the street, were likely underreported. And so we decided that it would be important to do this Chinese survey in a platform, on a platform that's popular with Chinese speaking newer immigrants, to see if we can capture some of that data there.
And WeChat is a place that where people who speak Chinese or Mandarin are more likely to hang out on social media than in other types of platforms that people might be familiar with.
It's the Chinese social media platform where people share news, people ask each other for referrals to restaurants, babysitters, and everything. So there is a very popular platform.
Yeah. Let me take a moment to reintroduce my guests. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about stereotypes, sexism, and racism that affects Asian women, both as Asians and as women. This is what academics call the intersection of those identities. We're joined by Dr. Teresa Mock, a licensed clinical psychologist in Urbana, and Grace Chan McKibben, who's executive director of the Coalition for a Better Chinese American Community in Chicago. If you want to join our conversation, the number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. One of our student journalists here at Illinois Public Media, Vivian Law, talked with Asian American women who are students at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Here's what they had to say about being an Asian American woman today.
Growing up, there was a stereotype about Asian women being exotic, being a fetish. I was even targeted in high school about being Asian and people thinking that, you know, oh, you're more willing to be docile or less dominant in the bedroom.
Right, because racism silences you, right? Racism dehumanizes you. But then like being a woman like sexualizes you. So suddenly you're like an object of lust and like profound hatred at the same time.
People continuously try to like justify harm or things that come to women in those cases because they act like as if, oh, like you put yourself in that position. Like they don't, like the kind of like mentality that they give is like, they're like, oh, like you can't have that victim mentality when you put yourself in a situation like that.
Those were the voices of University of Illinois students, Natalie West, who is Chinese American, Karina Say, who is also Chinese American, and Alicia Alam, who is Pakistani American. Dr. Mock, as I've mentioned, you're a licensed psychologist. Can you talk about the toll that racism and sexism, and even the more subtle insults and assumptions like the ones described, how they affect Asian American women over the long term?
Sure. I think that some of it, like we might expect when people are sort of having to deal with these stereotypes, these views of themselves, it can lead to a lot of questioning of your own identity, depression, anxiety, things that we might expect. But sometimes too, it's so pervasive and so difficult, I think, that it really can affect somebody's self-esteem and kind of how they see themselves in relationship to other people in terms of who they might choose to even date or be friends with. So it has a very corrosive effect at times, especially because some of these issues are not talked about so often.
Where do these stereotypes come from?
So it's interesting, and I think part of what Asian Americans feel frustrated about sort of in this moment, this is getting a lot of attention. And a part of me, I'm so sorry that it's happening, but I'm also glad that it's getting the attention because oftentimes I think it goes underground. In this country, in the US, when we think about race relations, we often talk about and think about black-white issues, and that certainly is necessary and important to discuss. But when it focuses so much on black-white issues, it often leaves Asian Americans and other groups marginalized and left out of the conversation. So it can be helpful to know, for example, that the Page Act of 1875 was the first restrictive federal immigration law in the US that prohibited the entry of Chinese women. And it was very specifically tied to their sexuality. It was to block what was called moral Chinese women from coming into the country. So it created this policing of immigrants tied to their sexuality. And I'd also say that there are lots of media images that we think about that Asian Americans are often not represented in the media, or people don't think about them in the narrative of race. So we have very long-standing depictions, even going back to the 1800s, when we think about the story of Madame Butterfly, or the 1950s image of the geisha, and oftentimes they center around this image of Asian women as being submissive, passive, and often selfless, I think, but selfless particularly in relation to white men, that often the images of Asian women as spoils of war is that they would give up their life, sometimes very literally in movies or plays, to sort of further a white man, and that's very damaging.
And we need to take a break here. We're going to continue this conversation. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about the intersection of sexism and racism and how it affects Asian women and how a lot of it has been invisible or less visible through our history. We're speaking with Dr. Teresa Mock, who's a licensed clinical psychologist in Urbana, and Grace Chan McKibben, executive director of the Coalition for a Better Chinese American Community in Chicago. Please join our conversation. 800-222-9455 is the number, especially if you are Asian American woman in particular, who has experienced some of the things we're talking about, and you're willing to share what you've experienced, or maybe you're just concerned. Maybe you've been a bystander to an incident in the last year and want to talk about ways that you might be able to step up. Please give us a call. 800-222-9455 is the number. After the break, we'll continue talking about some of the history of anti-Asian incidents in America and what we can do to help all Americans see the humanity of Asian American women. You're listening to The 21st. More to come after a short break. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. Whether you're just starting out or upgrading to your dream home, Busey can guide you every step of the way, because they know there's no place like home. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking at the beginning of this hour about the stereotypes and sexism and racism that affects Asian women. And we're joined by Dr. Teresa Mock, a licensed clinical psychologist in Urbana, and Grace Chan McKibben, executive director of the Coalition for a Better Chinese American Community in Chicago. Listeners, we want to invite you to join our conversation. 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. You can also always tweet us at 21st Show. And Grace, I want to begin this next part of our conversation by asking you about the model minority myth. What is it? Why has it been harmful, particularly to the image of Asian American women?
Yeah, so there are several myths that Asian Americans have been plagued with, and one of the more common ones is the model minority myth, which was actually created in order to pit Japanese American against African Americans, to say that, you know, why can't minority groups be more like the docile, quiet Japanese Americans, and it's harmful, even though some Asian Americans embrace the model minority myth and say, oh, you know, we work harder and we keep our heads down. And some Asian American parents tell their children that if they are quiet and work hard and excel in education or excel in their careers, they would be able to overcome some of the stigma. And it also masks the fact that Asian Americans is a group that comprise of over 30 different ethnicities from different countries. And some groups do better education-wise and economically because of the way that the visa system was constructed to give advantage to folks that have better education and better professional credentials. But it is makes mainstream think that everyone is doing well and that Asian Americans don't need to be helped, or that there are no low income folks that need more assistance. So it is harmful in that way.
And Dr. Mock, I wonder if you have a perspective on that. Is this something you talk about with your clients in your practice?
I think it can come up at a personal kind of level, certainly, but yeah. I want to echo what Grace mentioned, that absolutely it's something that is seemingly positive. And I'll talk even with people, maybe not so much in my practice, but who kind of feel like there's nothing wrong with being a model minority, or what's the complaint that Asian Americans do well? And I think Grace was right. What it does or did is it serves to pit minority groups against each other. It really de-emphasizes a lot of cross-racial alliances, which we know happen, but don't get talked about as much. And it really suggests that Asian Americans don't suffer from a lot of problems. So I think oftentimes they can feel they're not sure, do they have a problem or not, or they should be doing well. And it makes them feel invisible, I think, in society.
I want to play now another piece of tape. This is, again, one of our student journalists here at Illinois Public Media, Vivian Law, talked with Asian American women who are students at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We're going to hear three more perspectives about being a target of racist interactions. Let's listen.
In order to be accepted, you don't want to kind of like state your presence or do something that goes against it. Like, I guess in normal situations, you could compare it to like, you don't want to make it awkward. So you just kind of take it, or maybe you're just like, oh, they didn't mean it. But just because they didn't mean it or they didn't intentionally mean it, it's still racially insensitive.
I've been thinking about like relationships I've had with like men, and like white men in particular. I've thought about things that happened when I was really young, like every time like someone didn't protect me from like a racist remark or something, you know, like I didn't realize I like had anger about some of these things. Or like,
as a woman, it's already kind of like I gotta be extra careful, take all the extra precautions. And then with the rise in like attacks against people of Asian descent, like it just like uniquely makes us as a population that much more vulnerable to these kinds of like to harassment, and like in like the worst cases, terrible act, like heinous crimes and acts of violence.
Those were the voices of University of Illinois students Caitlin Ho, who is Vietnamese American, Corinna Say, who is Chinese American, and Raina Wu, who is half Chinese and half Japanese American. And Dr. Mock, the young women we talked to are from a range of ethnicities, but they share similarities as women of Asian descent. Can you talk a little bit more about this pressure among Asian Americans to think, well, you know, maybe what's happening to me is not so bad, or to downplay, you know, remarks that they might hear in order to fit in?
Mm-hmm. So I think that can be sort of a common, even if we talk about it broadly, psychological kind of response that it can help anyone to think or to try to minimize, because sometimes by acknowledging the full extent to which something's happening, it can feel really devastating, even more so. So I think it can make sense to do that. And I think a lot of Asian Americans, and we have to think about how broad the group is, that generation level makes a big difference. That for a lot of Asian Americans, if their parents came from an Asian country or they're a more recent immigrant, it can really feel like, again, in this narrative where race in this country is largely constructed as black and white, it can feel safer to kind of keep your head down and be invisible. And I think we don't see that as much with more acculturated Asian Americans, people who have been in this country for generations, who feel like they can speak up or articulate some of these things. Because when it's not talked about, I think it contribute to the silence around all of these issues, or suggesting that they're not happening.
We also heard from a woman named Leland Pan in Naperville, who shared this voicemail with us.
I think as an Asian American, I am scared more than ever to be myself because of the situations that are happening. And it's always been across my mind going to restaurants that we see, like most of them would be predominantly white. And whenever my family and I would sit down, it would always come across my mind, always.
Grace Chen McKibben, in your work as executive director of the Coalition for a Better Chinese American Community in Chicago, I wonder, do you hear that sort of sentiment from people out there? How common is that?
I think there's a mixture of different reactions to the recent incidents. There is a group that definitely wants to speak out and speak up, and folks have been asking, both Asians and non-Asians have been asking about what they can do and want to join rallies. There's a rally that Chinatown Security Foundation and CBCC are co-hosting in Chinatown next Saturday, and we've heard from a lot of folks that want to join or want to volunteer to help. But I think the sentiment that that was just voiced by Lillian was also true, that I've also heard from Asian American women that feel like at this moment, they feel so anxious and vulnerable. They do not want to go outside. They want to be at home and be safe and to feel protected and comforted in their own homes. So we've heard from both.
Dr. Mock, can you talk about how being on alert like that all the time, right? That sort of fight or flight, how that physiological reaction affects people's mental health in the long term?
Absolutely. What we know is that it's detrimental because it's exhausting. It takes a high degree of mental energy, and people may not consciously be walking around, although often, as we've heard from followers, that there is a large degree of being cognizant that this is happening and being aware. But it takes a real toll on a person to go out and to feel vigilant, to worry about even a simple trip to the grocery store, if that's going to be met with a racial slur or violence or something else. So I think the long-term effects, sort of health-wise, people can get exhausted, depleted. They can have a lot of symptoms. They can have difficulty sleeping, eating, focusing, a lot of symptoms of sort of PTSD, just being under this kind of constant stress.
If you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're exploring the stereotypes, sexism, and racism that affect Asian women. We're speaking with Dr. Teresa Mock, a licensed clinical psychologist in Urbana, and Grace Chan McKibben, who leads the Coalition for a Better Chinese American Community in Chicago. A few days ago, Governor J.B. Pritzker held a news conference with Asian American political leaders at a park in Chinatown in Chicago. Several leaders have proposed legislation that would require schools to teach Asian American history. Grace Chan McKibben, your organization works on policies that affect the Chinese American community. I wonder what you think of this proposal. What effect would it have on Asian women in particular?
Yeah, I think it's very important and is potentially very impactful. So CBCAC, the Coalition for a Better Chinese American Community, is one of the organizations that work with Asian Americans Advancing Justice Chicago, which is the lead organization for this legislation. It's called the TEACH Act, and it it requires all Illinois schools to teach Asian American history in public schools. And just like we said at the top of this interview, that we Asian American, anti-Asian American sentiments didn't just start with the coronavirus or just start recently. It goes way back to the very beginning of Asian Americans being excluded or being discriminated and written out of the laws or erased from history. So it's very important that we learn about both the Asian American accomplishments that are part of the fabric of this country and also the struggles and challenges that we face as part of the fabric of this country as well.
And I guess I should pause and take a moment for a little cross promotion here. If people are interested in learning more about the TEACH Act, the Teaching Equitable Asian American Community History Act, I did talk about that with State Representative Teresa Ma, who actually represents Chinatown in the Illinois General Assembly. She was on our show earlier this week. You can find that conversation on our website at 21stshow.org. And also for people who are PBS supporters and have access to the PBS Passport video streaming site, there's a five-hour series on Asian Americans that came out, I think it was about a year ago at this point. It's still available online if people want to learn more. And they're no longer in school to get the benefit of instruction from a teacher. But Grace, can you talk about what are some of the lessons that are currently missing from high school American history classes that ought to be more inclusive of the Asian American community?
All the things that we've talked about, the PAGE Act that Dr. Mock, that Teresa had just talked about, excluding Asian American women from immigrating to the U.S., the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882 explicitly excludes all, the Chinese Exclusion Act bans immigration of all Asian Americans, Chinese Americans in specific at that time, and also more recently, and that wasn't repealed until World War II, until 1943. So these are all harmful legislations. The very first legislation against Asian Americans actually happened in 1854, because Asian Americans, in particular Filipino Americans and Chinese Americans and Japanese Americans, have been in this country since the middle of the 1800s. So in 1854, the US had an appeal case, People versus Hall, that ruled that Chinese and anyone who looked Chinese could not testify against white citizens in court. So it does go way back.
We're coming near the end of our conversation. And Dr. Mock, I want to ask you, for people who are listening to this, who are white, Black, Latino, what can they do to help Asian women, either as allies or bystanders? Jump in when they hear or see an Asian woman being demeaned. What would you say to them?
Yeah, so I would say, first of all, there's a lot of power in validation. So to be supportive of someone who's gone through something, to actually name it, to call it if it's racist, or to say this is not acceptable, to feel empowered to kind of step in or do something if you see something. That what we know is that can really help people who feel under attack feel less alone. And so also I'd encourage people to kind of educate themselves and to think about diversity from a very broad, holistic perspective. People can also write to their elected leaders, join a march, donate to a nonprofit, go to a training. So there are lots of things people can do.
And from our texting group, we heard from Marlene in Urbana, who said, I've heard insulting jokes or accents. I also think that we as non-Asian, but not necessarily Caucasian, exoticize them on the regular. I call out people when I hear rude jokes. I mean, Dr. Ma, what's a way to productively address that sort of situation in real time?
So I think it can depend on the group of people that you're with and your own personal comfort level. I think it's always important to assess how safe you as an individual may feel. Sometimes it doesn't work to call people out in a big group, but oftentimes pulling someone aside or saying, this wasn't okay, this made me feel uncomfortable, right? Speaking to it really directly can help.
And we're almost out of time. Grace Chen McKibben, I want to ask you in just less, maybe just a few sentences, if you can talk, are there other policies that you're pushing for that would help empower and protect Asian women?
Not specifically Asian women, but I think that the policies that we've been pushing for in the Asian American community is language access, and the benefits not just the Asian American community, but all immigrant groups. Because as we talk about all these incidents and people are afraid of or reluctant to report incidents, a lot of it is because of mistrust of government, but also mistrust of, but also a lack of language abilities. So all of the government offices should have a way for folks that are not comfortable speaking English to be able to make reports or inquire, get information in their native languages.
Okay, and we're going to have to leave it there. Grace Chen McKibben is Executive Director of the Coalition for a Better Chinese American Community in Chicago, and Dr. Teresa Mock is a licensed clinical psychologist in Urbana. I want to thank both of you for being here with me and talking about this today here on the 21st.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
More to come after a short break. You're listening to the 21st. Stay with us.